the critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Eryou.
We are your TV BFFs, and this is a podcast about the TV shows that people love most. And specifically, today, it's a podcast about The Sopranos, one of the greatest, best, most favorited shows in TV BFF history so far. And joining us are two former guests. You know them from season one. They also have both chosen The Sopranos on each of their respective criteria. Please welcome Darren Karp and Casey Jost.
Woo-hoo!
Here we go. It's Gabba good to be here.
Waiting in line at Satrial's.
That would be the life. All I want in my life is to be able to like have like to sit outside of the pork store with my friends.
Right.
Order some gabagool and call it a day. Like, I want to sit at a pork store. You got to be a little bit fatter, though.
I'll do it.
Well, that's, would you rather hang at Satrial's at the pork store, or would you rather hang at the Bada Bing in the back room?
Satrial's.
Pork store all day. I mean, like, Bada Bing is so sketchy. It makes me so sad.
It does.
I know. It really is.
Is Bada Bing the strip club?
Bada Bing's a strip club.
Yeah. Okay. But like, you know, they killed pregnant strippers there for like one episode, one of the guys did. So it's like, Satrials feels safer. You know what I mean?
It
and
does.
You get your food. It feels safer. Bada Bing is dangerous territory.
That's actually a great time to bring up the spoiler warning.
Yeah, exactly. we're gonna bring up the spoiler warning. We will be spoiling all six seasons. So full spoiler warning. We are going to spoil the show. That said, though, we do have one person on this Zoom, Brandi. You have not seen The Sopranos.
I have not seen The Sopranos in its entirety. I think I've seen a couple of episodes here and there. And I feel like I kind of know what goes down in the show just because I'm a person who is alive and has read magazines.
Sure.
But I do have a connection to the mafia in that I am an executive at the History Channel and I am working on a big documentary about the five families. So I'm very much terrified of them. And also, that more interestingly, is that the like people in the mob have been like, Sopranos had somebody on the inside because this is very true to life.
Definitely. 100%.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Like, this is how stuff happens. And like, and as I was like reading this book, I just kept thinking of like the book that we're drawing from for the documentary. I just couldn't believe how much of I couldn't believe it was all real. So I was like, oh, this is the kind of stuff that happens in Sopranos.
All the more reason to watch it, Brandi.
Exactly. So Darren and Casey, so how many times have you seen it? Because again, it made both your criterias. Casey, it's in your forever. I think Darren, it was in your favorites. So curious how many times you both have seen it. And if either of you watched it like as it was airing, although we were probably pretty young at that point.
No, I never watched it when it was airing, but I watched it when, you know, I was like 25 or so. And then I watched it again like 3 years later. And then about a year or two ago, maybe 3 years ago, Lisa and I started from season two because she had already seen it. That's my wife, Lisa. And we watched it from season two on. And it actually was a more enjoyable watch for the third time around because season one is great, but it's figuring itself out. Like if you watch the pilot, you're like, okay, this show doesn't know what it is yet, especially if you've seen the series. So we skip season one. And I recommend if you're on your like second or third, skip season one and like you'll click in, you'll get everything that you need. And you just, it's like, it's kind of more enjoyable and it's easier to dive into.
Interesting. Darren, what about you?
I watched it as soon as it came out. I have one of those crazy parents that let me watch like Oz and The Sopranos when I was like five and that like
wow.
Prison rape. Yeah, my parents are cool. And now I'm a lesbian in TV. And so you can blame them. No, I watched it as it was coming out, every episode. First one when it aired, last one when it aired, never missed it. And then I rewatched it again with my first girlfriend right in college. And then I rewatched it again with my now ex-girlfriend. So I've seen it in full three times. But it's also one of those TV shows where it's like, if you're flipping through the cable and there's an episode on HBO, like I would turn it on and I know exactly what's happening. And it's just like, I now have the knowledge of it where I could just kind of go in and out of it as I please, but I've seen it in full three times.
I watched it for the first time within the last 6 months or so. I started it late last year, 2021, and finished it in late February, 2022. So it took me about 4 months. I didn't want to rush through it. And towards the end, I kind of slowed down. because I want it to last. But what I love to do is talk more on season to season, right? So like we mentioned, you both have the show on your criteria. So we'll have a little recap or just kind of highlights of each of the six or seven seasons, however you want to slice it. And then at the end, we're going to debate and try and come to a consensus on what is the group best, favorite, and forever season Soprano. So sounds like, Casey, season one might not be in the mix for you, but let's start there with sure. season one.
I want to say this, that it's very interesting that at the basically within a year of each other, this show, which is a like, you know, mafia guy goes to therapy, was done twice. It was done in Analyze This and in The Sopranos. And they came out like they were basically written at the exact same time. But it's really interesting at this time, people were fascinated with not only mob stuff, but like a therapist plus mob.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic premise. But yeah, I mean, like first season, like to Casey's point before, like it's just setting itself up for what it is. Like it's a great season one. But I think if you look at it in sort of big picture and you can kind of move out, it's not going to be the best season. But today that season one isn't great. Like, of course it is, because it gave us the rest of The Sopranos and got the viewership going and the rowdiness behind it. So it's like I support season one, but it's not making my criteria either. But essentially, you just learn that like there's this mob boss, Tony, and he's going to therapy because he has panic attacks. And you're sort of in your mind, it's starting to set you up of like, do I feel empathy for this guy or do I not? Do I want this guy to win? Because when you want this guy to win, you want this fucking murdering lunatic who's a mob boss, like, to win, but also this family guy who has a wife and a daughter and a son. And so that's really what, like, season one kind of just does in, like, a blanket way.
You put that right, because it's a testament to the series, like, that season one's, like, are not our favorite, because it just gets better and better. And I think if the series ended at the end of season one, it would be, like, a very good series, but not what The Sopranos became.
Right.
No. Yeah.
It is. You have to give it a lot of credit because it's the building blocks. It's the foundation for what became a truly iconic television series at like the height of television.
Yeah. And I will say about season one, I think there are still some like really standout episodes, right? I think the one that's talked about a lot is season one, episode five. It's called College.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. When she goes to college, I was going to mention when Meta goes to college and he kills someone.
Yeah, Tony and Meadow go to tour a bunch of colleges in Maine, and Tony notices somebody who, like, I forget the specifics. I think, like, somebody who, like, used to be part of the family and, like,
yes.
ratted and is in witness protection, right? Is that what it is?
Yes.
And yeah. he, like, tracks this person and fucking kills him while he's on a college visit with his daughter, who, by the way, also asks him in the car, hey, by the way, are you in the mob? Like, what's the right. deal? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And, but Meadow's like showering in the motel. And then like Tony goes to like kill this girl. She's like visiting and he's like a little college tour for like 45 minutes and he comes back and then they just continue on their day. And you're like, yeah. That's what makes it so brilliant. Cause you're like, do I like this guy? Like, I don't know. He's a good dad.
Does he tell his therapist the truth of anything?
No.
Is that a story that like builds that he ends up telling her the truth?
He will never be like, I killed this guy.
No, but he'll be like, I had to take care of a situation. You know what I'm saying?
She knows what he does. She knows what he does. She knows what he does. Absolutely.
She knows what he does. And that becomes actually a really fascinating story throughout the series as well. Like her reckoning with him as a patient, helping him, rooting for him. And then eventually we get to see sessions with her own therapist talking about what she's like. So it gets very layered and really interesting. On that therapy tip though, I will also say too, like I didn't watch this series until my mid-30s, and looking back I'm like, fuck, I can't believe it took me this long. This is so great. Darren was right, Casey was right, everyone was right. What took me so long? But then also I'm like, I kind of appreciate that I waited until I myself was in therapy to watch the show, where, you know, a white guy goes to therapy every week. Like I could understand a lot of that. Not just like the phraseology and terms and stuff, but just like those conversations. You know, it was much more relatable, was much more recognizable, even though to your point, like he's a, you know, murdering monster by the end of the thing. You really do empathize with him in a lot of ways.
Psychopath. The true. I mean, it's a psychopath goes to therapy.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many things I like about the show. And I'm glad we're talking about like season one, because it like and that episode you brought up does it perfectly, which is like this balance between being this like mob boss and like having these things that you have to do that you're born into, and then also balancing like a family and keeping like that dynamic as healthy as it can be. And then he has so much stress between those two worlds that he's like having panic attacks. And that's why that's what gets him into therapy, is he's having these like panic attacks. And then but that's like a really controversial thing in the mafia, because you don't tell anybody. And it's like, you can't appear soft. And at the time, therapy's come a long way. People don't really think like the person who goes to therapy is soft anymore. People don't even call each other soft anymore, because that even has a bad context. You know what I'm saying?
You're canceled for even describing that shit, Casey.
Yes. And so it's like, it's really interesting. It's like such a time too, where this guy can't, and there's a generation that's like, I would never go to therapy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're like, I, you know, I'm not a sissy, that kind of thing. And he's like, but on top of that, you know, they'll think that, you know, he'll say something, and you know, they don't know a therapist like has a, you know, like an oath that they can't, you know, tell the authorities. So like, they're like, you know, he'll squeal, and it's like, that's part of being like keeping secrets and stuff. So it's a very complicated dynamic, and that adds to his panic attacks. And that's what's amazing about the series.
Yeah. And I also love too, like you were talking about, like being soft, guys in the mob would never. There's also another, like, this show is also fucking hysterical. Like, it's super dramatic and super brutal, but it's also so funny. There's this whole episode and scene where like Tony finds out that Uncle Junior goes down on women, and that's a big secret. And it's real. It's played for comedy because it's funny, right? Like,
talk about soft.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, that's even worse than going to a therapist. Going down on a woman, could you imagine?
Exactly.
How weak am I?
Uncle June, how was Boca?
Wonderful. I don't go down enough.
That's not what I heard.
About what?
Nothing. I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm talking about.
What was with you and Uncle June tonight? Tell me about Uncle June.
No, stop it. Stop it. I can't.
Yes, you can. I can't. I know you want to.
All right, okay. Well, let's just say your uncle has acquired a taste for her.
Uncle June gives head.
World class.
The old man's whistling through the wheat field?
Don't be disgusting.
Oh, he's a bushman of the Kalahari.
See, I don't tell you anything because you don't know when to stop.
Oh, my God, if this ever gets out.
Oh, yeah, like you don't do it. Or any of your friends. Bunch of hypocrites.
Hey, what goes on in this bedroom stays here, and you know that.
Once a year, I can resist the urge to gossip.
But then it gets back to Uncle Junior, and he's like, that's the thing that, like, really makes him seriously consider putting a hit out on his own nephew, is the fact that he was making fun of him for going down on women. You know what I mean? It's all rep.
Yeah.
It's all rep. So season one, I feel like, does set up the nuances. Tony's mother, who's like, obviously, you know, that's an important character there, Livia, because
Livia, of course, huge.
He obviously suffers so much psychological and emotional abuse from her as kids. And like, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw The Many Saints of Newark, Casey. Did you watch the prequel? Some of the stories, and despite what you think about that series, some of the stories that they bring up, though, in the original Sopranos about, like, the beehive, her getting into the beehive. And I was like, that's nice. Like, that was, like, nice moment. So you kind of learn about Livia a little bit more. But Livia is a very terrible person.
Yeah, by the end of the season, Tony's mom is complicit in an attempt on his life. So that happens.
There's no real villain in season one, right?
Not
outside the mom. Like, she just seems like she's just, you know... That's it.
It's family. Yeah.
That was actually going to be one of my questions about the show. Like, if they're, because like Tony Soprano seems like such a, like, obviously he's like our like anti-hero, but is there like a big bad? Like, I'm just thinking about like in Breaking Bad, how like Gus was kind of like the big bad. And
yeah.
Like, is there a big bad in Sopranos? Like, because it seems like they're all like murderous maniacs.
Right. And how do you make a difference there?
Yeah. Yeah, like,
so to that point, I feel like it's like an insidious thing. Like, I feel like there's no one person, because all of them together are so subtly bad as like posing as real people, that they could also just like take their kid to college and then kill someone and strangle them and then take their daughter out to dinner. So it's like, it's not one person that you're like, oh, fuck that. There will be a guy named Ralphie that I feel this way about. And season two will bring in more of these like bad people. Yeah. But
and like, there are different bads in other episodes. Like, you know, not bad, but like the guy that Tony's trying to kill in that college episode, it's kind of like, you know, you feel for them, but you're also like, well, I guess they had a law, like they had this
code
and they broke it, you know, and that, you know, you kind of like your own morals as a viewer change as you see these episodes. And there's all these different things like that happen. And so like there are standalone episodes like Ice Caps, right? Well, that's much later. And then there's this like waspy sort of like, you know, family, and you hate them for no reason. And they're like, right. Like, but you're like, they're the bad of that episode, but they're not the story arc episode, a bad guy. And there's a few seasons that have a story arc, like main guy that they like Tony's got to like deal with.
Let's jump into season two, because season two has one of those guys, right? So Brandon, I would say as far as like big bads, like the antagonists, in the series are always the people that are threatening Tony's power. That's what I think it really comes down to. Like not every season, but like you'll find kind of like season long threads where it's either someone is introduced who is coming after the leadership.
Or the family in general.
Or the family, or is putting him into a hole where he needs to make an impossible decision in one way or another. So in season two, we get Richie Aprile. So Richie Aprile was the brother of the former head of the crime family who died in season one of cancer. And then kind of Tony steps up to take his place. And then Richie Aprile, which the old boss's brother, gets out of prison and he comes back in. He's been gone for like 10 years. He doesn't understand how things go now. And
to give context, he starts dating Tony's sister, Janice.
Janice also arrives. Yeah.
So that puts him very related to Tony, because now it's like, and Janice is like the most annoying family member you'd ever have. Like you always have one. Yes. That's Janice. And the name Janice, it's just like, she's the fucking worst, but she's also kind of the best because she's equal to Tony.
Yeah.
You know, he like respects her.
It's an incredible character because she's so annoying. I love that actor. The actor that plays her is so good because
she
plays it so obnoxious. And it's incredible. It's like, it's an incredible performance in a way that you're like, I hate you.
Yeah.
And then this season we also get, they go to Italy to broker some sort of like larger deal. And then they bring Furio back with them as part of that deal. So Furio enters the mix.
Incredible.
Great character.
Season two, we get one of the best characters who short-lived. This is maybe your first big spoiler here, Brandy, who has the best nickname of all, which is Big Pussy. That's who comes into season two.
I've heard of him.
And he's, don't be going down on girls now, Brandy. That shit's not cool in the mob. Don't be doing that. But Big Pussy is like a brother to Tony, I would say. Like he's a brother to Tony and he ends up turning on him. And he ends up wearing a wire.
He was in season one, and I think he like disappears. And that like, and then he finally shows back up in season two, and everyone's like, where the fuck were you, bro?
It was a conspicuous absence, is what they say essentially about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a really complicated thing because he's also, you also get his side of the story, and he's put into a really impossible situation too. So it's that thing of like, it's, you feel for everyone. But you're like, ultimately, like when he does, you know, in this season get killed, you're like, oh my God, like, well.
Yeah.
Them's the breaks.
And the show puts you in such a position. It's the end of the season and Tony's like, one, it takes him a while to realize it. And then he gets food poisoning. And in like these delirious dream sequences, he kind of realizes to himself that Big Pussy is the rat.
Yeah.
Again, you're sympathizing with Tony. It's like, man, this poor guy can barely see straight, can barely stay off the toilet. He's got to go kill his best friends. You know what I mean? It's like,
And that's also the beauty of it. So they take Big Pussy out on this boat, right? And they're like, we're going to go look at this boat, you know, and takes a few guys out. And like, Big Pussy is like, okay, yeah, I'll go out on this boat with you. But then the moment he steps on the boat, he knows exactly what's going to happen. And that's the thing that Sopranos does, I think, better than other TV shows, which is why it's so good. It's like, you could predict what's happening. You know that Big Pussy is going to get fucking killed and you know it, but the anticipation of what they lead up to is just, it like is a dagger in the heart. Like even though you know Pussy's going to die, that whole scene of him being on the boat, like you're on edge, you know, and not because you don't know what's going to happen. It's because you do know what's going to happen. And that's what's really, really interesting about it. And on the flip side of that, I never thought about this either, but season two also brings in another confidential informant that happens later on is Adriana, who starts dating Tony's nephew, Christopher Moltisanti, who's a very, very big character in all of it. I mean, he's essentially maybe the second biggest character, I would say, outside Tony. And he starts dating Adriana, who is love of my life. And that is a complicated relationship. So season two sets up honestly, Tony's demise, I think, ultimately, like throughout the rest of the show in a weird way.
Yeah. Well, because Adriana, she hasn't been flipped yet. We just get to, we get to know her.
And she's amazing. And I love her.
So going into this season, I knew Big Pussy dies. That's like, it's kind of like popular culture common knowledge, pretty much.
I mean, he literally swims with the fishes. Like he, like they literally put him in a trash bag and put him in the ocean.
Yeah.
I will say this, that this season sets up some stuff that I think changes the whole thing. And it's the reason why it's talked about is the we talked about it, like when he has that vision or that like fever dream, they do these things that are like really artistic choices that like, you're like, is this suddenly like a David Lynch kind of like show? And if they didn't do those, make these big choices, these big artistic choices, I don't think, again, like, I don't think it would have the same sort of impact. You know, it makes it, if it didn't have all these kind of things, it would be like an Entourage or something. You know what I mean? Where it's just like a mafia boss stuff. And it does these things and it really elevates it. It's what makes it so great. And in fact, that like everyone loved that stuff, which is so bizarre.
Yeah. The season also ends the second to final, the penultimate episode, which also gained reputation as like the strongest episodes, not just for Sopranos, but like it became like an HBO tradition. Like the one before the finale is where all like the big shit happens.
Yes.
In this one, our antagonist, Richie, gets killed, not by any Tony's guys, not by anyone you might expect. And this was like, I knew Big Pussy was coming. I did not know this was coming. Like, stood up on my couch, gasped.
This was a good scene. This was a good scene.
Janice, Tony's sister.
Wait, yeah, Brandy, can you believe it? After hearing about Janice, she's the one.
She kills her boyfriend, Richie.
And Tony was like, happy. Tony was going to put a hit on him.
Yeah, they get in an argument. He hits her. And she just kind of like very quietly, like you think she's just kind of like retreating. She goes upstairs, comes back down with a gun and just fucking shoots him right in the kitchen. And like immediately.
Which also that scene and it's jarring. But also, if you really think about its brilliance, it sort of shows like nature and nurture that because Tony and Janice grew up with the mother that they did, that to some extent you can be born a killer. You can be born with like a lack of respect for life. And it's not just Tony having to be in this, like Janice, who's not in the mob at all and is a woman. So no one would expect her to kind of do it. Just fucking doesn't even think twice about it and just shoots him in the fucking like whoop, in the kitchen. And you're like, oh, maybe it's not just Tony. Like this is obviously a deep psychological thing too. And so that's what's all, it's really layered.
In fact, Janice like preaches all this like peacefulness and like she like went to like kind of hippie communities and like on the West Coast. And so she left all that and she thinks like she's high and mighty. So Tony's also really happy that this like, you know, any chance he can to like knock her down a pedestal too. But he's also, he's like relieved about it, but he has to take care of this and it's sort of hush hush. But also she's really remorseful in an interesting way that they're like also out to lunch. But it's a really fun twist. And the other thing we haven't talked about is like that sounded like they had sex. Was like, she, like he would have a gun to her head as they were like, and like that's what they liked as like that was like their sort of kink.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's it's the same gun, which is really interesting.
See, Brandy, one thing you'll learn about the mob is that they have kinks just like us.
Well, Brandy, so a couple seasons in, what parallels are you seeing from what you've learned about the actual mob in your research?
The complete disregard for life,
human life. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like anybody, it's just like, oh, nope, they're going to die. And like this, it's just like that people are just expendable.
Mm-hmm.
Like I couldn't, I was just like, I can't believe this is real. That like there are people, there's like a whole group of people amongst us that like.
It's either a complete lack of respect for life or a complete respect of only your life.
Yeah. Well, and just like the self-servingness of them.
Mm,
yeah. They have their own rules and like certain things are more important than other things. But I'll also say personally that sometimes when I do watch the show, I'm a little bit more brassy. I'm not a psychopath. I'm not killing people. But like I'm a little bit more like someone does something, I'm a little bit more quick to be like, hey, come on. You know, like I think it changed. I really do. And I've talked to my friends about it. Like we're a little bit like more like once you start watching it, like you just start, I don't know. You take on some of the characteristics, not in a good way. I find myself like sometimes being a little bit more surly or like, brassy about interactions. And I'm like, I have to take a break. I can't go into that right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right.
let's get into season three then. So some of the overarching things in season three, we meet Ralph Cifaretto.
Ugh, Ralphie, the worst.
Meadow gets a boyfriend who is Jewish and black. Tony loves that. Dr. Melfi is assaulted. She's raped.
She's raped in a hallway.
And Tony takes that personally, and that spirals in a lot of different ways.
That's an important scene just to stop on, because obviously Melfi is like this massive character in it, you know, and she knows probably the most about him emotionally, more than his wife, more than his children, maybe even more than him. She gets raped as she's like in this, in like the stairwell or whatever. And there's this moment where, you know, she's bruised, like her face is bruised. And Tony's like, you know, basically what happened to you? And she knows that if she tells him the truth, he will kill this guy. He will find this guy. He will kill this guy. He's the employee of the month at like this local bar. She finds out. So she knows that she can do it. And she says nothing. And it's this moment of just being like, I want to tell him. He will protect me. He will do this. And she stops herself. And you're like, especially as a woman, like especially in like this professional thing, you're just like, you're gut wrenched by the fact that she didn't do it. Like the restraint on her was insane. So he never finds this out.
We all want her to tell him so he can fucking kill the guy.
Right.
We all do.
Because the rape was tough. The rape was horrible to watch. Horrible to watch. And she doesn't do it. So it's like, oh, agonizing. So that's a really, really big scene. Like, that's very important. So he never finds out.
I just realized we really like have been, you know, underselling Carmela Soprano.
We haven't mentioned her at all. Yeah.
I think part of it is we've been like really kind of into the Tony angles and stuff and like mafia stuff. And Carmela is really kind of in a lot of ways protected from it. She reaps a lot of the benefits from it. And she kind of, you know, turns a blind eye. But I will say that Edie Falco is far and away the best actor in the entire series.
100%.
Like including Steve Buscemi, who comes in, like all these great actors that come in. There's nobody better than Edie Falco. And in fact, like James Gandolfini is so great in it, but he's never as good as he is when he's in a scene with Edie Falco. It's like their performances together are great. Like when James Gandolfini is with like Pauly Walnuts and stuff, like you could tell he's kind of like phoning it in because it's so easy for him to be the best actor like in front of the lens.
Yeah.
When he's like with Carmela, he's like stepping up his game because you could tell like she's so good. And they're like, interactions, like whether it be like when they're loving or when they're fighting, are so good. It's another reason why you tune in.
It's so true. Edie Falco is like just awesome. And Carmela, I mean, she's got Tony kind of by the balls, but also has no power at the same time. Like, it's really interesting. I remember she goes to Europe with Rosalie April. And like Casey said, she reaps the benefits. She's living this huge house. She has huge jewelry. She's a member of the community. You know, she goes to church and doesn't really know anything, but she knows. And she's going to Italy. And in order to like be nice, Tony's like gives her this Louis Vuitton wallet. And like in the Louis Vuitton wallet, it's just like hundreds and hundreds of dollar bills or whatever. But I remember Tony's always like, that's the real Louis Vuitton. And whenever I get my girlfriend something nice, no matter what it is, or I make a breakfast, I'm like, that's the real Louis Vuitton. And she's like, all right.
It's so fun.
I got the real Louis Vuitton. Yeah.
To your point on Carmela, though, this is the season where they start doing couple therapy sessions. Carmela joins Tony with Melfi for a couple sessions,
yeah.
Which is doesn't take well to it, but it happens and it's interesting.
Also, just to say real quick, Tony cheats a lot and Carmela finds out a lot.
Yeah. And that's part of the code too, I think. It's like Carmela knows it's happening.
Yeah, I assumed that. They love extramarital affairs.
The Gumars are interesting.
And that's also part of the culture, though. You're Gumar. Yeah. And, you know, I think for Carmela, she knows that Tony's fucking around, but she finds a nail in their bed that's like a fake nail. And she like flips out on Tony. And it's not like she doesn't know. It's that it was brought into her house that she's like.
Yeah. It's like, you don't bring that to my house.
Yeah. She's like, hell no. So she's an interesting, she's a really interesting character. But Ralphie is kind of the big takeaway from this season because he's literally the worst person ever. And he
Yeah, so who is Ralphie?
Well, you think Richie's bad.
He's trying to be a capo.
In some ways, he comes back to town after jail. No, Richie got out of jail. He just comes kind of back around. He's been around a little bit, but like.
He was in Miami, I think, maybe.
That's what it was, something like
and
that.
And he's just like really detestable. Even for Tony, he's like a horrible person.
Disgusting.
But he's a great earner. He makes the most money, which is why he's a big part in everyone keeps him around, right? Even though he sucks.
Yes, but he's obnoxious as shit, and he starts dating one of the like strippers at the Bada Bing, and she becomes like pregnant with this baby, and she's like young. She's got like braces. Like they really youngify her. She's like 16, 17. She gets pregnant, and he like takes her out back and just beats the shit out of her into the fence at Bada Bing and like kills her and his unborn child. And you like see that without even thinking. And then he wipes his hands and he goes back into work. Yeah. Like that's him. And even Tony, like Tony, you can tell has sort of this, his own code within the code. Like, I mean, granted he's a horrible person to women, but he like would stop at prop. Like he took a liking to this girl. He was you know, terrified that Ralphie killed this pregnant girl. Like I'd like to think Tony wouldn't do that, even though obviously, you know, he's a depraved individual and
right.
wouldn't hurt women and children, but you know, Ralphie would.
Yeah.
This is a heavy season. I mean, and then it ends with like, The last three episodes of the season are Pine Barrens, one of the best ever in the history of the season.
Seen it.
Brandy's seen it. Let's go.
Tell me about it. Wait, why did you see it? Because you heard it's good?
No, I actually don't know why I've seen it, but I remember the name of it.
It's so interesting.
As you guys start talking about it, it's going to start clicking in what it was. Like, I feel like I'm seeing a scene from it, but like, I can't tell. I don't know who the people are or like to tell you what's going on. But like, I know I've seen that episode.
Yeah. Long story short, Christopher and Polly are like stuck in this like cold area hunting down this Russian guy.
Yes.
Collection went bad. He ran away.
Steve Buscemi, who appears later in the series, directed this, which is really fun. Just the whole thing is, it's not a bottle episode, but it has that feeling of like they're departing from the series somewhat of like where they usually film and how they usually do things. It's like a mini movie. It's like a mini standalone sort of movie. And but it tells so much about these two side characters who you know a lot about, but they're also an enigma in some ways. And it's great. It's just the performances are really good and the storyline is really great.
Do they like kill somebody or they were like dropping off a body or something?
They're trying to kill somebody.
He was like a Russian soldier at some point. So he was a real deal. And he like took a bullet, but like got out of the way and ran, and like they had to chase him down. But
yeah,
but you don't know. They never find the body. They never find him.
So right.
It's unclear. So it's like a botched mission that now Tony, like the adult in the room, kind of has to come in and rescue these guys because they're too stupid to get out of the fucking woods. So that's a notable episode.
I'm dizzy. My fucking head is killing me. Hello?
Arthur Bay Connection, so I'm gonna talk fast.
The guy you're looking for is some kind of ex-commando or some shit. He killed 16 Chechen rebels single-handed.
T? T, that you?
Ah, damn it.
I didn't hear what you said, Tone.
So I'm gonna talk fast. The guy you're looking for is an ex-commando. He killed 16 Chechen rebels single-handed.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, nice, huh?
He was with the Interior Ministry. Guy, some kind of Russian Green Beret.
You're not gonna believe this. He killed 16 Czechoslovakians. Guy was an interior decorator.
His house looked like shit.
This was one of the first, like, ambiguous, like, real ambiguous endings, right? That I think maybe lays some track for later on and how the series ends. I'm actually looking right now, right? There's a whole section about this episode about Valeri's fate. The creators have been asked, like Terrence Winter, who wrote it, was asked, and David Chase, and they're all like, we're not going to tell you. We like it better that you don't totally know, because he's just some fucking Russian. Who cares, right? He could have done this, he could have done that. But they're like, the number one question I get is, where's the Russian? And I'm not going to tell you.
I love that.
You could already see the seeds of that ambiguity starting to seep in, which I think is really cool.
And it puts you in, they do this a lot too. It puts you in the shoes of the characters. And so they don't know what's happening and they don't know everything. And so now you don't. So it's like, you know, just as much as them. And how often do shows allow you to do that? It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how does it end? I'm looking at, so Amar Fu and then Army of One are the endings of the season. It's like the Jackie Jr. stuff, right?
Essentially it ends. Jackie Jr. dies, he gets killed, and Jackie Jr. was dating Meadow at the time, and Meadow, who's Tony's daughter, takes it like very, very hard, and essentially she starts kind of like drinking, and she storms out of the funeral because she's like so upset at Jackie's death and like can't recover, and that's pretty much how the season ends.
In the running, though, for for a criteria spot, especially with those last three episodes.
Definitely in the running. It's definitely in the running.
Are there any like law enforcement characters that are like main bill or okay?
Not main bill, but there's a couple.
There's actually like there's this FBI guy that's really interesting who like you think he's really against Tony, and in a lot of ways he is for a long time. And then after a while, he's like kind of taking care of Tony. Or he's like, I heard from the guys that follow the New York team that Johnny Sack is like, could put a hit on you. Like he helps him out later on. Like it's a really interesting thing. And like, he's crossing lines just the way Melfi does. And it's like, it's really cool. But there are definitely, there's also a whole episode that's like the FBI point of view, and they're going and they're secretly bugging his house.
Right. That's all this season too. The surveillance is this season with the lamp. Season four.
We get a lot of Johnny Sack, who's the New York underboss.
Brandy, this is where your expertise is going to come into play. We get a lot of New York, New Jersey talking to each other. What I learned based on Sopranos is that there was a lot more communication and coordination between the New York and New Jersey mobs. Does that track with what you know?
There's coordination amongst all of the families, like across the country. Like, so the whole thing kind of started with Lucky Luciano. He was like, he made the commission, right? So the commission is what started like the five families of New York, but the commission also brought in like people from all of the different big cities, because big cities, second tier cities, whatever, all of these cities have like a presence, and like they like decide on all these rules and stuff, but basically they were like, the New York families are the ones that run this shit.
Yeah.
And
Well, Chicago was big at the time too.
Chicago was big, and like they went to Chicago and like hashed all this out.
Yeah, it's like New York, Chicago, and Atlantic City, right? Were those the three big ones?
Boardwalk Empire kind of stuff.
Buffalo was a big one, and Boston was also big. Miami,
I believe it,
and New Orleans, and then Bugsy Siegel took it out west, like with kind of starting Vegas and stuff, and then he like fucked up.
So. An interesting thing here is like going back to Sopranos, because there's some tension within like the boroughs or in like, you know, New York to New Jersey. And this New York guy, this big like head of New York, who still runs New York, buys a house in Jersey. Because you know how you do. Like, you know, he wants to move to the suburbs, right?
Yeah.
But so it's like, it feels like, all right, are you moving in on our territory? Like, what's going on here? You know, you're going to show up at all of our things. It's like, what's going on? And like, they have to get along, but like, it makes Tony feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's like, you could have moved to Long Island, my dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're encroaching. Yeah. And this season, I think, in general, if I were to sum it up in like a log line, it's really like the demise of Ralphie, where we really see him being like the most like just assholey of guys. And we were talking about before, the three of us have just had like a little comment, you know, ego is everything and rep is everything. And like a little comment can change it. So Ralph makes fun of Johnny Sack, who runs the New York mob, makes fun of his wife, who's like very fat. Okay. She's like obviously very overweight. And he makes this off color remark about her. And Johnny's like, I'm setting up a hit on Ralph. Like, fuck this. Like, you cannot make fun of my life. He eventually calls it off, but he's like, absolutely not. Like, I'm killing this dude because he makes fun of like my fat wife. And
probably Walnuts tells him, right?
That's right. That's right. And so there's a lot of, you start to see a little bit of the struggle between the two kind of mob bosses and maintaining their own family. But this is also the season with Piomai, which is their horse, if you remember.
The horse. I was going to say, it's the Piomai season.
A horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a horse.
So Ralphie buys a horse, like a racehorse, and Tony like falls in love with the thing.
Falls in love, like obsessed.
He loves animals. He loves ducks. He loves the horse.
He does.
He loves ducks. That's right.
He like gets a painting with him on the horse. Like, it's so weird. Like, he's just like.
Oh, and then the funniest thing, fucking Polly takes the painting after and repaints it to make him look like a general. Oh, ridiculous.
There's like a painting of like Tony Soprano in like Revolutionary War gear.
I just Googled it.
Yeah.
Well, first photo, he's not in that. And then Tony's like, get this out of here. I don't want to see it. And then, you know, Paulie's like, I'll take it. I love Skip. And he like has hired someone to like change it slightly. And then Tony sees him. He's like, what the fuck is this? He's like so mad about it. He's like, you kept it?
I want to run through a couple storylines real quick. So this is the season where Polly's in jail for a big stretch of it. So Christopher gets promoted to be in charge of that crew. We get way more Christopher. At the same time, his heroin addiction is spiraling.
Oh, yeah.
Uncle Junior's trial starts, and the whole, like, is he going senile? Is he losing his marbles? Is he acting? Starts there. We get more Bobby Bacala this season. His role increases. Mm-hmm. Johnny Sack and Ralph. The pile my horse race stuff, and then
Bobby dates and marries Janice Brandy, another one of the capos, marries Tony's sister.
This is also the Carmela Furio season where they're really feeling each other. So Furio was the guy who came back from Italy to join the crew, and they're like falling for each other and both trying to not let Tony know. And do they cross the line? Do they not? Really interesting stuff and some great, great Carmela storylines with the whole Furio of it all.
Yeah. And Furio never crosses the line because he knows he'd get killed, essentially.
Oh, I want Carmela to get hers.
I know. That's what we all feel. We all feel that way.
But yeah, so basically the Pie Oh My story, though, I feel like is the ultimate story of this season.
Yeah. When does that come to a head?
Because Pie Oh My dies in a fire. Now, granted, like, this is Ralphie's horse, but Tony's obsessed with it. And this is stable fire, killing Pie Oh My and all the horses. And like Tony surmises, although we never officially find out, but we are allowed to kind of assume, Tony surmises that Ralph burns down the farm in order to collect insurance money on the horse, ultimately. And Tony is like more in love with the horse than he's been in love with. And like, he's more obsessed with the horse than he is about any other thing in the show, I think, entirely. It's a weird relationship with the horse, and Ralph denies the fire, and he approaches him out and he denies the fire, and they end up getting into a big fight, and Tony kills Ralphie, strangles him to death.
Over
which
the
is
horse.
An awesome death, and it's awesome to watch because you're like,
oh, it's a whole fight.
Takes yeah. place
in Ralphie's house, right?
In Ralphie's house, that's right, and kills him, like gets him with like a frying pan and just beats the shit out of him, and he's so upset about the horse. So
at one point, I think he sprays like Tony's like eyes with like roach spray or something. I remember, or like Pam, like, or Crisco.
It's like Raid or something. I think you're right. And so then Tony's all fucked up, and it's a really good death scene.
I might go ahead and say that this is the best season. I mean, we'll talk later. There's other ones that I love, obviously. Ooh. But there's something that they balance so much.
Season 4 is my forever.
Season 4 is your forever. Okay, so season 4 will be in the mix, it sounds like. Season 4 is in the mix.
Casey and I are on the same page.
Just talking about it, they balanced so much. This is too much. Like, if you were like, right? all this stuff happens, you're like, this is too much.
And I'm sure we're leaving out a bunch too, right?
We can't get through it all because, like, it couldn't get worth it. But season 4 is a great season.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's really fucking good. On to season 5. Season 5, this is the Tony Blundetto season. This is when Steve Buscemi enters the mix properly. This one is really high for me.
And he's great.
Yeah, so who is Steve Buscemi coming in as?
He's been in jail.
He is Tony's cousin, right?
Yes.
He's his cousin.
Yes. Yeah, I forget how the lineage goes, but he's actually related to Christopher as well. Although Tony and Christopher are not actually like blood related.
They're related through Carmela.
Yeah. So, but I think Tony Blundetto, you know, Steve Buscemi's character, is actually related to both of them by blood, like in this weird way. I have to look at the chart again. I could be wrong.
Tony's like his brother, kind of. I mean, they're cousins, but they're brother. And Tony Blundetto,
it's really close,
goes to prison and kind of takes the fall for something that Tony doesn't have to deal with. So there's a lot of power struggles with that.
But Tony starts at like from a really neutral, like, I've served my time. Like, I don't really want to get back into this.
Wants to stay clean.
Right.
He wants to stay clean, but he's not avoiding the family or you know, those things.
He wants to be a massage therapist.
That's right. He does.
It's a heartbreaking arc because he's such a sweet character. He's just trying to do the right thing. And he gets sucked in, obviously, you know, like, and then he also gets, you know, there's things that piss him off, and he's asked to do things he doesn't want to do, and it doesn't go well. It's one of the most tragic storylines, and, you know, well performed, but it has like really fun ups and downs, and it's everything that The Sopranos has. There's like humor involved in it, but it's also really like heartfelt, but like serious, and Buscemi plays it perfectly.
And you also get one of my favorite character names this season, this guy named Feech Lamana, which is a great name. Feech Lamana. Like,
that's a good name.
Brandy, that's your next kid, Feech Lamana.
My little Feech.
You like hate Feech, but he's just such an interesting character. Have we missed the Vito stuff?
No, that starts here. So Meadow has a boyfriend, gets him a job at the construction site, where he sees Vito, which is a member of the crew, who we haven't seen a ton of up to this point. He starts to play a bigger role.
We've seen him though. He's been around.
We've seen him. He's a good earner. We know that about him. He runs a lot of the construction stuff. We know that about him.
He lost a lot of weight.
That's right.
He was really heavy. He lost, like, in real life, lost a lot of weight, and they brought it into the show in a fun way. Like, he was really, really heavy, and he lost probably like 50, 60 pounds, and they used it. They, like, you know, and they made it like it's his thing. But yeah, go on.
He's also a closeted character. He's gay.
Oh, okay.
And in the world of Sopranos, I mean, if you can't go down on a woman,
yeah, no.
Imagine, no. Right?
You definitely can't be going down on dudes. Let me tell you, no going down.
And Meadow's boyfriend gets to a job site early and sees Vito doing exactly that. So that comes up. It doesn't really start paying off until the next season, but that's introduced. This is the season of AJ is really going off the rails. AJ is just an absolute fucking asshole. He's a little shithead, kind of bouncing between both houses because Tony and Carmela are also separated at this point. They're not living together. What else do we get?
The big thing for me this season is Adriana.
Adriana, yeah. That's the other thing.
There's a murder that happens at her bar, the Crazy Horse, that she's kind of like the manager owner of, you know? Murder happens, FBI investigates, and essentially she's kind of like, she'll be charged with the murder unless she kind of comes forward. She freaks out. She tells Christopher that she's been an FBI informant, her husband, you know, and he's like, we're going to leave together. I love you. You're the love of my life. We're going to leave. We're going to go away. And you like believe it because he's so in love with Adriana and you believe it. And you're like, they're going to totally run away together. And then you eventually learn Tony calls Adriana and he's like, Christopher, you know, is about to commit suicide. He's drinking the drugs again. It's really bad. You got to meet Syl and he'll take you to the hospital. Syl goes to pick Adriana up and they're like in the car and they're talking about Christopher. And like all of a sudden Adriana's like, we're not in the hospital. Like we're in the middle of the woods. And she knows exactly what's going to happen, which is what happens with Big Pussy. And she's just crawling for her life. And you don't see her death. It happens off camera. And you just see Syl's gun. And she's in the woods begging for her life, crawling for her life. And you just see her crawl off camera and he shoots her. And you know that Christopher like ended up, you know, telling Tony and she dies. But it's like,
yeah. And we see those scenes later.
It's gut-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching. And you root for her. And in this, because of her death, Christopher also goes back into a lot of heroin and drug use because he can't handle the death because he was obsessed with her.
Yeah.
So that's the big storyline of this season, which is a great death.
Huge.
Also very good telling of that whole thing. It makes me feel really, took me back.
Oh, thanks.
To put a cap on this, so Tony Blundetto, Tony's cousin, ends up getting killed at the end of the season by Tony's own hand. But strangely, it still leaves a lot of rifts. So like the whole thing was Tony Blundetto organized his own hit, like kind of on his own. I think that's, or like without Tony's knowledge, basically did a hit against one of someone related to the New York crime family. And I'm forgetting these details. So Darren, Casey, if you guys remember.
There's like the Leotardo guys.
Phil.
Yes.
Phil Leotardo.
Phil Leotardo. So that's what it is. That, and Phil Leotardo is like a bad motherfucker. He's great.
Phil Leotardo becomes a big antagonist and a really great character. But basically Phil from the New York family is like, yo, Tony killed my brother and I need to kill him. Our Tony doesn't let that happen. And then eventually to kind of get out of the situation and not, you know, starting a war with the New York mob, he goes and kills his cousin instead. But even still, that isn't good enough for Phil.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy because Phil's like, I needed to kill him.
Yeah. Right.
He's pissed.
It's wild.
And then basically this season ends because so Phil works with Johnny Sack in New York, essentially. And so Tony goes over to Johnny Sack's to try and like have this reconciliation. And as they're talking at this house, you see these cops swarm the house and they arrest Johnny and Tony manages to escape and like run away. And he's like runs in the fucking woods and he escapes. And so he doesn't get caught by the police, but Johnny does. So that's also part of the rift. And that's how that season ends.
That's right. Yeah.
It packs a lot in.
It's fun.
It's a lot. Oof, that one's up there too. I don't know. This is going to be tough.
It's great.
Oh, don't worry.
This is going to be tough.
4 and 5 make my top 3 list. Just saying.
Gosh, how do we start with season 6, guys?
This is Kevin Finnerty, right?
This is Kevin Finnerty.
We should start with the first episode then. The first episode, he goes over to Uncle Junior's. I forget even why, but basically...
just to take care of him.
Junior is just like diminished mental state and just shoots him for no apparent reason. Just is confused and doesn't know where he is or who he's talking to.
He thinks he's like a robber. And so he just...
and shoots Tony. Him. And then Tony is like in a coma, unconscious for the next couple episodes. We get the Kevin Finnerty stuff. So I'll let you guys take it away from there.
It's crazy because the first time I watched this series, the Kevin Finnerty stuff I thought was literally like 10 episodes. I thought he was in a coma for like 10 episodes. But when you watch it, it's really like only like 2 or 3, you know, and it changes a lot of things, but it really felt for a long time. But when you're watching it week to week, as like when it's coming out, it probably felt like even more like, wow, is this show like jump the shark? This is crazy. Like, is he ever going to get out of this coma?
So who is Kevin Finnerty?
It's like he dreams he's this salesman on a business trip who kind of, he misses his briefcase and identification.
He doesn't have an accent.
Right. He doesn't have an accent. He's like, hi, my name is Kevin Finnerty. Like he's talking like a normal dude.
James Gandolfini does not have like an accent. He's not Tony Soprano in this.
Right.
He is a person named Kevin Finnerty who has these like interesting parallels though to Tony's life. It's really cerebral and odd. And
it's very arty. It's very arty because you're like,
yeah, there's always like a helicopter like searching for him, but that's like the light, you know, it's like that. It's really beautiful.
It's multiple kind of interpretations, but essentially, I think ultimately it's kind of meant to show that like he's having this kind of mental breakthrough of all of these things. You know, he finally got shot. He finally almost got caught. And like, maybe he needs to mend his ways in his life. Like he's too old to be doing this kind of thing. So he's imagining himself as this other guy who's like, quote unquote, normal accent, normal life, salesman dude. But eventually he gets out of the coma. So don't worry about that.
The crucial scene, the one that I think about all the time, is when he walks up to the house and Tony Blundetto is on the porch.
Oh my God, that's so creepy.
It's basically like the very end of this experience, and it's his subconscious deciding whether he's going to wake up or pass on, right? Because he's like, they're outside this house, and Tony Blundetto, who we all know is dead, right, is like, come on in, we're all waiting. And you can kind of hear like the family and like chattering. Like you could feel that there's a lot of presence behind that door and a lot of people that Tony knows.
Ralphie's in the car with him being like, come on. You know, he's picturing all the people he murdered, essentially.
But then, yeah. And then he like recoils and he's like, I'm scared. I'm not ready. Like you don't see Tony Soprano get scared like this. And he's scared of the afterlife and kind of like recoils. And then he wakes up and he's out from his coma. Oh, I'm getting the chills just thinking about it. It was so fucking good.
It really is good.
Excuse me. Is this the Finnerty reunion?
Hello there. They're waiting for you.
Me?
Of course.
Has Kevin Finnerty arrived?
We don't talk like that here.
What do you mean?
Your family's in sight.
What family?
They're here to welcome you.
I don't understand.
You're going home.
I am? What is that?
Briefcases aren't allowed.
Oh, the voice.
Please, let me take that from you. Looks like it weighs a ton.
I don't want to.
Well, you need to. You need to let go.
But what's interesting is like, this feels like how you would end a series. And there's so many more episodes after it. It's a really interesting, like, it feels like, oh, we're ramping up to end it. But then there's like a ton. And he also goes back to a lot of his bullshit. In a lot of ways, he like hasn't learned his lessons. And he's almost worse. Like he does worse shit. Like, well, we could talk about it, guys. He kills Christopher.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
So much happens in this season. My God, I don't even know.
Oh my God, fuck, so much happens. Well, first, because we touched on Vito already, this is where we get the resolution of the Vito storyline.
Interesting. It's in 6, huh? I always thought it was in 5, but yeah, it's in 6.
It's in 6. So it's in the first half of 6.
And he flees.
Beautiful episode. I mean, tragic but beautiful.
He flees, he goes to New Hampshire, right? Live free or die. Yeah.
And like falls in love with a diner guy and they have like a little relationship. Like he gets a little taste of what we all want for Carmela.
Yes.
And he actually gets to like live it, but not for too long.
Right. How does he meet his end?
He comes back to Jersey because he like, he misses the benefits of like the old job. So he comes back to try and show Tony. I think also it's like his own internalized homophobia. I think that's like before homosexuality was like, everyone's gay. Like this was how it actually was. Is like, so he comes back trying to show that he's a good earner. He asks basically Tony to allow him to turn to work. And Tony can't figure, like, Tony's like, I don't think so. You know, he like fails to act because since he's a homosexual and because he waits so long, Phil ends up like brutally executing Vito because of his like homosexual tendencies. So,
well, he's married to like Phil's sister or something.
Yeah. Or like and cousin so or pissed. Something. Yeah,
cousin. So and he's got two kids and like a wife and he like leaves and there's all these rumors.
But you should also know that, like, they kill him, but then New York guys are, like, making fun of Vito, and then Tony's guys find out, and they kill the guys who are making fun of Vito. So there's, like, it's like, we don't want him to be gay, but he's still one of our own.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's still one of us.
There is a nice conversation. There is also a nice, like, nice for them conversation where, like, Tony's sort of accepting, he's, like, of Vito. He's like, he was a good earner. That's all I care about. And it's, like, the most, it probably didn't. So much for like Staten Island guys his age, you know what I mean? Who was just like, yeah, Tony's okay with it. Like it was probably like that's probably the biggest progress. Like that they could point to, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what? Like I accept my son because of Tony Soprano. That one comment that was like a marginal difference.
That's so right.
But it seemed just like even that though is like still not even close because like he's not accepting him. He's like, oh yeah, I like it because he made me money. It's like,
yeah,
but
yeah.
You know.
Christopher goes to try and make this fucking movie Cleaver with like Ben Kingsley and like, which is a weird storyline.
Which is part of his story arc to this character arc is like, he loves movies and like, there's a whole thing with like, he wants to make a mob flick or there's a part where there's like,
he's a writer.
Essentially it's the movie Cleaver isn't really important here, but essentially like it's Christopher's chance to get a dream and it essentially just goes kind of nowhere. And he is giving a little bit too much his own personal life in this artwork. And like everyone's kind of concerned because he's giving a lot of like trade secrets of what happens in the mob. And so basically this is always Christopher's way of like mourning the death of Adriana, in my opinion. Like this is what he's doing, like trying to keep busy. And then he gets really bad. I think he gets really bad into drugs again. Right. And that's kind of how he dies because he marries a new girlfriend, has a baby, gets back into drugs, gets into a car accident.
With Tony.
Oh, because they're like fighting in the car, right? Or no?
No, not even.
He's on drugs,
but they're in a pretty decent spot, right? Like he's on drugs, but he doesn't seem super, super bad.
Yeah.
And like this to me is like one of the most depressing scenes. They get in a car accident.
He was under the influence though.
He was under the influence. And Tony is fine, shaken up but fine, goes back to find Christopher, looks in the back seat and sees his baby's car seat, and I think has like the, this kid's never gonna fucking learn. He's halfway on his way out and basically just kind of like covers his airways
and
suffocates him to death.
And the tough thing about that is like not only that it's family, but that I think Tony saw so much of himself in Christopher. Like he wanted Christopher to be that next generation because his son AJ wasn't gonna do it. And Christopher just couldn't get his head into the game because of drugs. So he was like, I can't have this fucking weak person around. Like, I just can't. Like, it's me at the end of the day.
And I never thought it was going to happen the way it happened after a car accident where he kind of like halfway put him out of his misery, halfway looking. I thought it was going to be some sort of betrayal and he like literally like chokes him out. So,
well, they had a lot of ups and downs. There was also a point where like Tony or like drove Adriana home one time and everybody thought that like they hooked up.
That's right.
But they were a little flirty, but nothing happened, right?
No, nothing ever happened between them, but it certainly was kind of implied, and Christopher was insecure.
As far as Christopher's concerned, something did happen, and he was, like, really pissed, and he, like, wanted to kill Tony. And it was, like, all this, like...
Of all the things Tony's done, he actually didn't do that, but it just, Christopher couldn't get over it. But kind of also, long story short, is that Johnny, head of New York, dies, gets lung cancer while he's in prison. So the guy, Phil, who killed Vito, takes over and just is, like, so fucking mad at Tony and that side that he goes on a killing rampage and kills a lot of the capos in Tony's crew, like Bobby and all these guys and takes a hit out on all of them, which is obviously like the start of the huge war.
Yeah, it's a huge war. Oh gosh, and we skipped over like another huge like all-time scene, like the Bobby Tony fight.
I know.
Fucking huge in this season.
And Bobby is like the nicest dude, but Tony hates how nice he is because he's just like such a good guy that I think Tony, it's like a projection of Tony's own insecurity. Like Bobby, to me, is what Tony wishes he was, which was just like a good fucking guy. But Bobby gets killed when he's shopping for like a train because he collects trains and he like is shopping for it and he gets murdered in cold blood in the train store. Bobby Bacalari. It's really sad.
Yeah. In front of his son. His son's there too.
Yeah, his son's there too. So let's get to the end. All of this is kind of like this escalating New York, New Jersey war. If Tony does get murdered in the finale, it's because of New York. So like there is motive there. There are people that you know don't like him right now. But basically, like it's somewhat anticlimactic, right? Like it's him
intentionally so. Yeah.
Yeah, intentionally so. Carmelo, they're back in good graces. They're back together again. AJ is kind of figured out a way forward in his life. I forget specifically what it is, but he's not in a bad way right now. Meadows meeting up with them. She's parking her car to go and meet up with them.
Don't stop believing this plan.
Yeah, they're just in Holston's. Don't stop believing his plan. And we see some guy who looks maybe a little sketchy come in and kind of sit at the counter, but nothing really happens.
Somebody else goes to the bathroom.
Yeah.
That guy that goes to the bathroom.
Meadows parking.
Yeah. Not only earlier in this season do we are reminded of it, but like earlier on in the series, we have that conversation between Bobby and Tony, where they're talking about, what do you think it's like when you get whacked? And Bobby's like, I forget exactly what he says, but it's like something like, you don't see it coming. You don't see or hear anything. It just like, he kind of describes what that final scene ends up feeling like in some way, at least to me, that's kind of what I was getting, right? Like he described and foreshadowed that eventual scene. My take is Tony got killed. That's my take. What do you guys think?
It drops to black. I mean, I think that's sort of the assumption there, but you can kind of go either way because Tony does sort of evade death so many times in the show that it's like, well, what's one more? But this is, you know, this is the ultimate episode. Highly controversial. They're going to black there.
I'm the devil's advocate, and I don't think he dies. I think the show is really smart at letting you be like, what happened? And I think when you pull back and you look at like the writers wanted to have a great finale and they thought of something that's like an anti finale, and it's genius. Like they just cut to black. People were literally like calling the cable company. People didn't know what was happening. In fact, two friends of mine recently watched it, and this is going to sound insane. So a friend of mine had like an account and they all have like the Oculus. They watched it in VR, like not,
oh my God.
It's VR, but they watch it with it looking at the same TV sitting next to each other, but in different places. And one had never seen it. And as it ended, this is insane. She says, what happened? Did the VR thing cut out? Like, is there a signal issue?
Oh no.
Put it back on. So the thing that happened years ago when it aired and people were like, the TV's broken, check the TV, call the cable company.
She's thinking of it in VR. Oh my God.
The modern version, it still works. So like what they made is truly timeless and that proves it. But I personally think that they always show the death. Like, you know, it once in a while, like you said, like Adriana is killed off screen. But for the most part, they always let you know when someone's getting killed and whacked and they don't do it. So I think it's like really cute that it's possible. But I think what they were trying to tell us is what I said before. It's like he has to balance so much. He's always looking over his shoulder. It wanted to give you in the final moment the stress that Tony Soprano always has. Ooh. Balancing his mob boss, his life, this, like, you know, like you don't never know what's going to happen, the stress of everything. They wanted to give you that stress as like the final and then let you be like, you never know what's going to happen. And I like it that way. And I love it. I'm fine with when people are like, no, he's definitely dead. And I think I've read conflicting things from David Chase being like, if I wanted to kill him, I would show you it. Or he also said like, he also alluded that when Tony dies, and people are like, wait, you just allude to the fact that he died? So I think he's gone back and forth on it.
Well, I'll say what you said about the whole, like, them making it so that, like, you could feel how stressed he was. As I have been reading all the stuff about the five families, the big takeaway that I've had is that, like, it must be, I was like, I get why they put Tony Soprano in therapy, because this it's so stressful to be these guys. They could die at any moment. They live in constant danger, like this constant heightened emotion.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick a best, a favorite, and a forever season of The Sopranos. Let's start this way. What are the top three seasons in no particular order that are in the mix? If there's four, let me know. But like, what are the seasons that are in the mix for you guys?
2, 3, 4, 5.
Casey?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah, I would say I do love six. I really think it's incredible. Like what they cover in six is really good. Like you have Finnerty stuff and you also have the finale. And the finale is like one of the greatest finales of all time.
And the Vito stuff. There's a lot of good stuff in six.
There's a lot of good stuff.
I think six gets a lot of hate, but
yeah, six obviously is like the end of it. So that's obviously gonna be bad. But like granted, even in these ratings, like there's great episodes in season one that are like some of the best episodes of all time. It's just as a season, if I'm thinking best favorite or forever, it's not making it. Neither is season six. Cause like, I just need.
That's fair.
Let me throw an argument towards one back to what Casey said. Without season one, there is no Sopranos. If it's not a best favorite forever, it's probably still the most crucial season of The Sopranos. I think we can at least give it that.
I agree.
Yeah, but I think you could argue that for every TV show.
I don't know though, man. Like that episode College, I just thought was so free. I think about that episode all the time.
You've made me reconsider season one in a lot of ways. And I'm actually like, now I really feel like I'm going to start another rewatch. And I think anybody who listens to this will probably do the same.
You've kind of maybe convinced me to like, I think I'm going to watch.
I think you should.
Especially with what you're doing, like what you're researching. I think it's like, it's insane. It's so good too. It's like, that's going to be some enjoyable research for you.
Let's go 2, 3, 4, 5. Where would you put two?
I'm putting two at my best.
Casey, where would you put two if you had to?
I actually think it might be my forever.
You know, Big Pussy Dies. It's a good.
Yeah.
It gets arty. You know, you could really watch it. I mean, and I'm gonna back it up with Casey too. It's like any of these seasons could be forevers just because I learn something new every time I'm watching it. Like I'll catch something like that Bobby Bacala quote or some arty thing. And I'm like, oh, I never thought about that. So this could be a forever. It's going as my best, but I stand Casey's choice.
I think the reason why it's my forever is because there's a simplicity to it. That's like, they just finished season one and they're like, you know, they're working off that. So they're still building things. You know, Olivia's still alive. There's a lot, you know, so. And
Richie Aprile as an antagonist isn't my favorite. He doesn't stand out the most compared to like a Ralph or not that he's an antagonist, but a Tony Blundetto as the complication in that season, I think stands out more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about season three?
I was battling between season three and season four for forever, but I think I put in season four as my forever because that one packs the most heat for me. And Pie Oh My is just so subtly insidious. And I love that season kind of so much. So I could rewatch that forever and ever. I was between three and four. I went with four.
Pie Oh My is three or four?
Pie Oh My is four.
Four.
Ralphie meets his end in four.
Yeah. So I would say that four for me is best. I'm really torn between three and five for favorite.
Okay.
I put five as my favorite, so I will agree with you there. Five is a really good season.
I feel very confident about two and four in terms of like, I really think four is the best. It's like, if Sopranos was the best show of all time, season four is the best season of all time of that show.
Mm.
It's interesting. This, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but like the best favorite forever. It's like favorite is really interesting because there are things in three and five that are like some of my favorite little moments. And so that's what's so hard about it, specifically finding that like favorite.
Yeah, I would place a vote on five for favorite. I just think the Tony Blundetto stuff, you're gearing up towards the end game. The New York stuff is amplifying.
And Adriana's death.
And Adriana. And I will, that episode, Long-Term Parking, I looked through a couple like what are the best episodes lists. And like, I think that gives it a couple notches. I would put five as a favorite, if not best. I would defer to you guys. You both have a couple votes for two and four.
I'm going back to three again because I have two words for you, and it's Pine Barrens, and it's in season three. And
it is Pine Barrens. Yeah,
it goes back to that thing of like, you know, two. I think two, three, and four for me are the sweet spot, and I love five. Obviously, I love, you know, one and six too, but I think I'm going to have to go. Two is forever.
Two's forever.
Three is is favorite and four is best.
And I went two is best, five is favorite, four is forever. So it's similar.
It's pretty close. And I would go probably, it's tough only having seen it once through and having to just feel like just part of a whole. I'd probably go season three best, season four forever, season five favorite.
So I think four really hits all of us.
Four hits all of them. So four sounds like a group forever.
Yeah.
It's got two forever votes. I think we forego five, Darren.
If we're making a definitive consensus, I do believe I could fall in line.
Well, I want to make everybody happier. How does this sound as a cooperative definitive? Season two, best. Season three, favorite. Season four, forever. Two, three, four.
I'm good with that.
Beautiful.
I'm good with that. With an honorary mention to season five.
With a season five honorary, and don't forget about one and six because it's all fucking great.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's really what it comes down to, people.
And, you know, we don't have to talk about the prequel.
Yeah, I agree.
I enjoyed it, and I went to talk to all my like Staten Island friends about it, and they all like shit on it so fast that I was like, I'm not even going to bring it up.
Darren, Casey, thank you both so, so much for joining us on this new special series BFF episode, all about The Sopranos, our deep dive. Brandy, final word. Are you going to watch, and how soon will you start?
I think that I am going to watch, and I honestly think that I might start it. I have to go to California on business. That's when I like can catch up with like everything I haven't been watching. So I cannot wait to watch so much TV.
Well, here's the thing. You're going to start Sopranos and forsake all of the new and current things, because that's exactly what happened to me. There was a 4-month stretch where I fell behind on a lot of shows because of The Sopranos, and it was worth every minute.
Well, I'm excited.
All right. Thank you once more.
Thank you guys so much. This was really fun.
To our Sopranos BFFs, Casey Jost and Darren Karp, where can we find you guys?
You can find me at Casey Jost. My OnlyFans is at Casey Jost. I pay you to watch me. No, at Carpe Darren on Instagram.
And I'm the real Darren Karp. That's my handle.
Duh real is very important. You got to get the duh right. He's capturing the jersey. The real Louis Vuitton 456. 456.
I love it. With that, until next time, bye, friends.
Bye, friends.